So vote Trump and your incomes will soar, your net worth will skyrocket, your energy costs and grocery prices will come tumbling down, and we will bring back the American dream, bigger, better, and stronger than ever before, the American dream.
Donald Trump visiting IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, also visiting Smithton yesterday and made a stop in Katanning, a little private event, and went to a grocery store in Katanning, which had about 1,000 people attracted to this unannounced visit there. It's been a long time, we'll have to confirm, since a president or presidential candidate has visited Katanning, Paul.
I think the last visit was Bill Clinton back in the day, but I could be wrong about that. We're going to talk with Professor Jerry Schuster, who lives a couple blocks away, right?
Yeah. He actually called me yesterday. He said, hey, you're not going to believe this, but I'm a couple of blocks from where Trump came to Katanning. I said, oh, I didn't know that was on the scheduled stop. Apparently, you know, some donor private event was taking place, but he made a stop at a grocery store.
One of the stories that I read about this, the headline says, Trump gives mom of three $100 toward grocery bill. The name of this supermarket is Sprankles Neighborhood Market.
Sprankles.
And it's a family-run business and very local. And they say that the inflation problem has had actually sales go down in their grocery store in the last 3 years because the prices have risen, so they've had to make adjustments. You know, when I was reading this article, it reminded me of what we heard from Andy Amrine not too long ago about how they've made an entire change at EB True Value in the way that they approach winter sales and what they're going to stock or not stock, like salt or shovels and things like that. They've changed the direction that the business goes in those months.
And that was based on weather changes.
Right.
By the way, you got to tell them about the popcorn.
Oh, yeah. So apparently, there was this great big bag of popcorn.
I love this.
Let me see if I can get the quote here. Here we go. Sees this big bag of popcorn. Here's the quote. Oh, look, I got to get some. We got to get it. Trump smiles, handing over the large bag to his team. He says, is this good stuff? And then she says, it's the best. Well, if it is, I'll be in Washington, hopefully in the Oval Office, and I'll send for popcorn.
That's funny.
So he's very much at home in these kind of settings. He has the ability to interact with people, and you don't see a lot of reporting on this kind of stuff from the campaigns. Just like with Kamala Harris, I enjoy hearing those little sidebar stories about their interactions with, you know, shop owners or
right.
voters and stuff like that. It's interesting to me.
So he announced that he's coming back October 5th to the Butler Farm Show.
I mean, can you imagine the security that's going to be present for that one?
And I'm sure
it's going to look like an armed camp.
Yeah, from a security standpoint, they're probably not looking forward to, you know, being responsible to do that there.
And with the vice president being here to campaign tomorrow, we'll keep our ear to the ground and let people know right away, you know, what we find out about where she will be. The pattern in the past has been for the Harris campaign to do well-staged private events that are invitation only. So we may not get the word on that until just at the last minute.
Yeah, interesting. But what it tells everybody is Western Pennsylvania is so critical in this election because the candidates keep coming. J.D. Vance supposed to be here at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm. And well, you know, Trump repeated it again at the rally. He said, you know, we can't win without Pennsylvania.
And the vice presidential debate is on October 1st, and that's with CBS. We will have complete coverage here.
I completely forgot that.
Yeah.
That's probably the last debate we'll get.
It's a week from tonight and 6 weeks from the election. So the beat goes on. In other news, we've hearing a lot about strikes, particularly in the healthcare industry and also in a national level, you know, Boeing and some of these other big companies. But locally, there's a new wrinkle in this case.
Right. Nurses at UPMC Western Psych, the hospital, are saying that not enough is being done to help people in crisis. They say that dozens of beds at Western Psych are closed because of understaffing. They say the patient-to-nurse ratio is way out of whack, and the patients are increasingly going into units that don't specialize in their diagnosis. One of the nurses who spoke with the media yesterday is John Hobdy. Here's what he had to say about the situation.
During the night shift, nurses are often responsible for 14 patients each. And if we have to go to another part of the hospital to help, one nurse is left with 27 patients with acute mental illness. But when we're operating with less than a skeleton crew, it's very difficult to provide the care our patients deserve.
Well, I thank our friends at KDK-TV for that clip. Those numbers are surprising, eye-opening numbers. By the way, this was organized by the SEIU, Healthcare Pennsylvania Union. These are, I think, all union members, if I have it right.
And the issues with local schools continue. And today, we're talking about Burrell, the Burrell School District, flexible instruction day, two-hour delay today because of, quote, a concerning social media post. This has gone on and on and on since school has started here and around the country.
Yeah, the message from the superintendent, Dr. Wagner, said that these social media posts caused concern for several families and students. So they might have been specific in nature. They're not using the word threats here in the language of the statement that they posted on social media, and so we don't know exactly what happened. But in Burrell schools, it's remote learning today. They call it a flexible instructional day, but that really means remote learning back at the house.
And that's what people are talking about in the Big K Morning Show. Every time I hear about that St. Patrick's Day flood, my mom was born and grew up in Millville, which used to flood frequently. The Army Corps of Engineers, over the years, has done a great job in trying to mitigate that. But
Gertie's Run. All you have to do is just say the words Gertie's Run, right?
Yep. And she told us as a kid she was rescued from the second story of her childhood home through a window in a canoe.
That's the kind of story you hear in southern Louisiana after a hurricane.
Right. They just had, and KDK-TV showed this, the 20th anniversary of Ivan. And, you know, we did in September, we used to do, John Cigna started the spaghetti breakfast, which we did up until COVID. I think we should bring it back too. We'd serve thousands of people downtown for free. Didn't matter. You'd see a homeless person standing next to a guy in a three-piece suit, next to a woman in a dress, and everybody, we'd support Little Sisters.
There we go. That's what was his heart's behind all of that was his favorite charity, the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Who came in their white habits, and it's the miracle of the spaghetti breakfast that they never got a splash of
no,
sauce
isn't it wild?
Them. Yeah.
With all that sauce and
I remember interviewing the Mother Superior. I said, does it make you mad when people say, who'd they play? The Little Sisters of the Poor, you know, referring to sports.
Oh, right.
And she goes, yeah. She goes, we're tougher than that. But one of the nuns one year got in trouble because she jumped on the back of Cigna's motorcycle. You're not allowed to do that, sister. Oh. But she had a good time. Anyway, we did it one year when Ivan... Shumway and I were in Market Square, and it was Friday, spaghetti breakfast day, and we thought, we're going to have to cancel. It rained. It poured for 24 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were broadcasting live, and do you know what? People showed up for free spaghetti. People showed up for food, which goes to tell you. And speaking of which...
You know, I guess one of the added features besides, the meal being free, is you got Ricci's sausage in there.
Oh, yeah. We got to bring this back.
That sausage is so good.
Let me talk to the powers that be about that. We wanted to bring it back, but, you know...
I even got to do newscasts down there a couple of times. It was fun.
And you got to eat in between. Hey, speaking of which, and no one can ever give me a good answer why Oktoberfest is in September... In January, Germany,
the
world's largest beer festival, just kicked off over this past weekend.
Right.
It's two full weeks in Germany, and a big part this year is non-alcoholic beer. So many people are drinking less, they say, in Germany, that to keep up sales, they had 16 out of the 18 tents set up are offering booze-free beverages.
Oh.
Have you ever had a non-alcoholic beer?
I have. I didn't care for it all that much. I'm sure that they've improved the taste over the years. But, you know, you've been to the Hofbräuhaus here, right?
I have.
You got to see the Hofbräuhaus
right now
in Munich.
Oh.
Right?
The original.
For Oktoberfest. Now, I've been in there in the summer months. I was in there once, and the place was jumping. I mean, it was packed.
Do you ever see
big place?
The women who are...
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Big beer
stein. As many as 6 to 8 at a time in each hand.
It's unbelievable. You got to just search that. You know, Oktoberfest, the way they carry the beers around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm looking at each glass is like a... You know, it's like a quarter keg of beer.
It's like a 24-ounce mug.
If it's not alcoholic, those people are bombed.
Talk about being on your lips, right?
That's when the singing starts. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. And the region continues to be crisscrossed by the presidential candidates and their running mates. And, of course, yesterday, Donald Trump visited PA, and southwestern PA specifically, and here's what they're saying about the visit on CBS with Anne-Marie Green.
Former President Donald Trump, meantime, will return to Butler, Pennsylvania, the site of the first attempt on his life, for a rally there next weekend. This is Vice President Kamala Harris weighs a trip to the southern border this week, as both candidates focus on battleground states with 6 weeks until Election Day. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns reports.
With just 6 weeks to go until Election Day, new CBS News polling shows Vice President Kamala Harris holds a slight edge over former President Donald Trump across the battleground states, helped in part by a slight improvement in voters' views on the economy. Speaking to farmers in Pennsylvania, Trump laid out another part of his economic agenda, saying he would put a 200% tariff on John Deere imports if the company moves production to Mexico as planned.
It's hurting our farmers, it's hurting our manufacturing.
This week, Trump is on a battleground state blitz, which includes stops in North Carolina, Georgia, and Michigan. Harris is also ramping up her campaign schedule, with stops planned in Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. While campaigning in North Carolina over the weekend, Trump made no mention of embattled Republican candidate for governor Mark Robinson, who allegedly made racist remarks years ago on a porn site, and who Trump once called MLK on steroids. Top members of Robinson's campaign resigned over the weekend, and the Republican Governors Association announced it will no longer fund advertising in the state. Robinson has denied the reports.
We have full confidence that we can go on.
What won't go on? Another debate among the candidates for president.
Let's have another debate. There's more to talk about.
But this weekend, Trump said no.
She's done one debate. I've done two. It's too late to do another. I'd love to in many ways, but it's too late.
And after nearly a decade at the helm of the GOP, Trump was asked if he saw himself running again in 4 years if he lost this time around.
No, I don't.
Caitlin Huey Burns, CBS News, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
And Kamala Harris will come to Pittsburgh. The details of her visit in terms of the site and the time haven't been confirmed yet, Paul, as you know, but apparently she's going to roll out a deeper economic plan platform.
I guess a major economic policy speech is at hand. I think that's based on John Delano's sources in reporting. I think that's where we're getting that from. I want to give him credit.
And we also know CBS will host the vice presidential debate, and that will be coming up a week from tonight. And we will carry the entire coverage here on KDKA. Obviously, a long relationship with CBS. And Donald Trump was at the grocery store in Katanning. That's great. I mean, that stuff, that's smart on the candidate's part. You talked about in the old days of campaigning. Remember when Barack Obama came to Market Square, or Bill Clinton stumping for Hillary? And
exactly.
They would walk
pop up,
around.
Pop up somewhere, right?
Yeah, and they always had these great exchanges with people, and some we know, like down at Permane's, you know, the original in the Strip. And I'm trying to think of, because we interviewed, I had Bill Clinton on when he was, again, stumping for Hillary, and he was in Market Square while I had him on the air. And he was loving it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he loved that kind of stuff where he was just interacting with.
You've seen him one-on-one with people. He zeroes in on people, makes them feel like they're the only person in the room.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has a gift for that. I would also say that the reporting has changed in the last 10, 15 years. For example, J.D. Vance was up in Erie, and there was a set event for the campaign that was some controversial comments were made, and over whether or not there should have been, you know, who should have been at Arlington for the 13 soldiers killed in Afghanistan. So, not going to get into that. But then after that, Vance stopped at a couple of different places and had a beer with the locals in one of the joints. And there were people lined up, Selena Zito's reporting. And this is the stuff that the national media is just not covering. They go to the big event and then they move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about gotcha journalism.
That's a good way to put it, Larry. Yeah,
and they're always looking because that's what gets clicks, that's what gets views, that's what gets likes. You know,
I also think part of the story is watching the candidates interact with the general public. How do they come across? How do people feel about that? Even if they are supporters, right? What's the level of enthusiasm? You know, and we don't see that really much with the Harris campaign either.
But regardless,
because so much of what she does is so structured. You know,
regardless of who you're going to vote for, what party you're affiliated with, it's just so surprising to me that Pennsylvania, in particular southwestern Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, are so important that they're coming back. You know, there's 50 states. Seems like they're here all the time.
And the amount of money that's being spent.
Oh, it's, I mean, now, by far, Pennsylvania has received the most campaign marketing dollars from both parties.
I'll bet Marty knows how much has been spent so far here in the Pittsburgh market. I'd love to hear what he's heard lately.
Which is probably similar to what Marty spends on a weekend. You know, he keeps telling us.
Well, he's a one percenter. I mean,
that's right.
He often has repeated that fact.
Make no excuses.
Or is that a claim?
Coming up in the next few minutes, we're going to check in. There's a hurricane, we think, in the making with Tropical Storm Helene, and it's going to go into the Gulf of Mexico. We're going to talk to our meteorologist, Joe Lundberg, about that. And also, 10 minutes, I'm going to give you tickets to Dave Matthews, who's coming to 412-922-1020. Aaron, pick a number.
We'll do number six. Caller number six.
Six. You never get out of single digits.
No, I almost said 11, but we're going to go with
Marty.
Caller
used to
six.
Give you big numbers sometimes. And you and Samantha,
who's now
his producer. Yeah, well, 412-922-1020, caller number six, Dave Matthews. Did you ever see Dave Matthews at all?
I've not seen him inside the stadium, but I've seen him play at PNC Park through the windows of my apartment that faced down into the park.
And
opened the windows up and listened to him play.
Weird encounter with Dave Matthews. He was playing at Star Lake, and this is years ago. The Penguins were in the Stanley Cup playoffs against the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings were staying at the Renaissance Hotel downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to go there and meet some people in the lobby. They had a lobby bar there. And
I remember that bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we were there.
It had like a side street entrance there.
There was like Chelios from, you know, famous hockey player with the Red Wings, and Dan Marino was there. And there's a big fuss going on at the door. And it's Dave Matthews coming in. He was staying there too, and he's coming after the show. And Dan says, "Who is that guy?" "What's everybody, you know?" I said, "That's Dave Matthews." He goes, "Who's Dave Matthews?" I said, "You don't know who Dave Matthews? Come on, man. He's his own musical genre."
I think that's true.
So Dave Matthews walks by, and Dan yells out, "Dave!" And Dave Matthews looks over and goes, "Dan!" I'm like, what a bunch of BS.
No kidding. You've been busting him on that for years, would imagine.
Who's Dave Matthews?
Never give him a break.
Yeah. Larry Richard with Paul Rasmussen on this Tuesday morning, 6 weeks to the election. A lot going on. We'll cover that. Some of the people who were there at Indiana University of Pennsylvania And we'll also be joined by Dr. Jerry Schuster, who's an expert in presidential rhetoric, who's a Katanning native, and just blocks from where he lives, Donald Trump showed up, the little grocery store there. And he'll join us right after the news at 9. And right now, you've heard a lot about our new airport, $1.6 billion, give or take a few million. And joining us from the Pittsburgh Business Times is reporter Paul Goff, who you can see if you're on our stream at kdkradio.com. Paul, good morning. I see you're in your vehicle ready to roll.
I am, and I thank you for the heads up on the Parkway West and Roslyn Farms, because I'm going to have to go a different way.
You'll have to circumnavigate. So I was surprised you wrote about Pittsburgh International Airport and J.D. Power's ranking. I'm just curious why they would rank us when we're in the midst of this, you know, really 3 decades change in the airport anyway. So first of all, who is J.D. Power?
J.D. Power is a ranking service. You might know them from their auto rankings or healthcare or a lot of other kind of service-based providers, airlines, and in this case, airports.
Yeah, when you hear J.D. Power says, you know, that you do hear it related mostly to the automotive industry. They use it in their marketing. If their rankings are high and if they're low, they don't mention it, of course. So what about Pittsburgh International Airport? At this point, it's in transition. So why do they care?
I think it's, well, it's just an annual ranking. And some years, Pittsburgh International Airport's done very well. Top, second out of 15 of mid-size airports. Last year, it fell in the rankings. And then this year, it was I believe number 14 out of 15 mid-size airports, a range of the top being Indianapolis and the bottom being Cleveland.
And we're just ahead of Cleveland, correct? In this
yes.
case. And it seems like next year, obviously, all of the things that they talk about that are important to passengers will be addressed. And that was the whole impetus on creating this new airport. Again, $1.6 billion is a significant investment into taking Pittsburgh's airport to another level, right?
Yeah, and I think maybe this year's rankings ought to have an asterisk with it because of that. You've got a lot of things going on that would make Pittsburgh International Airport lower on passengers' minds this year. If you've been lately, they're doing work to the center core. It's clear that they are in construction. When you drive to the airport, sometimes there are different detours because construction vehicles on the new airside terminal or landside terminal. And then the other thing is also that it's just they've had a lot of challenges as TSA has in a lot of airports with lines. So at the security checkpoints. And I think, that's a double-edged sword, right? More lines, longer lines, which they've tried to deal with whatever limited resources they have at the TSA. But at the same token, it's good news because there are more flights going out of Pittsburgh now than there ever were, well, in the last 15 years or so.
You know, Paul, I would imagine the competition for these ratings is going to get more and more intense as we go down the road. So there's so many new airports, Portland, Oregon, New Orleans, Kansas City just come to mind right off the bat.
Yeah, I was just in, you know, I lived for a long time in New York and I was surprised when I flew out a couple months ago, flew out of here to LaGuardia and back from JFK. And, you know, those airports are they've stepped up in a major way as well. And those always were never the highest ranking. I think Pittsburgh will rise in the rankings, though, because it's going to be a new terminal. I've been in it during the construction, and it looks really awesome. There's going to be different and better parking with a parking garage. The center core stuff right by the food court and everything, that'll have changed. It'll be a much better experience now than before. And remember also that Pittsburgh International Airport, it doesn't seem like 1992 is that long ago when it opened. I have 3 kids that tell me That's actually a very, very long time ago. So it was built for US Air. It was built for an airline that doesn't exist anymore, didn't use it after the first 8 years or so in the way that it was intended. Baggage is a mess. I mean, I think that the Pittsburgh International and the Allegheny County Airport Authority people are doing an amazing job. I'm saying this as a passenger, not as a journalist, trying to do the best that they can to keep it running. I mean, I can't even imagine what the tram or the baggage claim and the baggage system, how much that costs and how often it might, you know, what it takes to keep it running in operation.
Yeah, there won't be a tram anymore. You'll be able to really pull right up, and you won't have to take the train, which takes away. This tram stops at gates A, B, and C, and D. which was right. Kind of a wink to everybody, because it only went to one spot anyway, right? Not like in Atlanta, where they actually stop at A, B, C, and D. We don't know exactly when the new airport will open, or the grand opening. We know it's expected maybe summer, late summer next year, right, Paul?
Yeah, they've been vague about that, other than to say in 2025. And I can understand that too. With any construction project, I mean, if this is a $1.6 billion, it'll probably end up being more than that when all is said and done. You know, I've had work on my house that doesn't take any, you know, it's not the same. The estimate never ends up being the reality. And if you can multiply that by something as large as a terminal project and all the coordination that needs to be done, I think it's amazing that it started in 2021 and it's here now, especially given, you know, all the challenges of supply chain, all the challenges of workforce, the fact that they had to run an airport. You couldn't just close down the airport and say, okay, well, see you guys in 2025.
All right. Well, what are you working on next, Paul? Super secret Pittsburgh Business Times.
Well, I just, when I was listening, former President Trump talked about U.S. Steel, and I hadn't heard that because I was sort of on a news blackout in the last 8 or 9 hours. So that piqued my interest. And there's a couple other things going on as well got a touring another construction project that I'll be writing about in the next couple of days.
Well, appreciate your time this morning. Read all about it in the Pittsburgh Business Times. Paul Gough, thank you.
Thanks, Larry and Paul. Thanks.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen. And big day yesterday in Katanning, Smithton, and Indiana, Pennsylvania at IUP. From the IUP News, we are joined by a video which you can see, our guest at kdkradio.com, Carson Zadroga. Carson, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I appreciate you dressed up for us, suit and tie. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So yesterday, obviously, it's pretty big. Anytime a former president or president comes to visit, especially University of Indiana. So as your role as a reporter, what did you see? What transpired?
Yeah, so this was really big because we were part of a local IUP news. So it's a student-run news. And this was really incredible for us. So we reported on essentially the whole event. We reported on the Trump supporters that were out there waiting in line. We asked a lot of them questions as well. We took footage of the overall event. There was a lot of people there. There was also a student protest against Trump coming. We also covered that as well and asked them questions. We got a lot of footage, and we got press passes there, luckily, which was really great. So we were right next to the people from MSNBC, RSVB, a whole bunch of, we were right next to the Reuters guy. Yeah, we were in the press box too. So when Trump pointed us and said that we were fake news, he pointed at me too. So that was pretty incredible. But yeah, we were right in the press box. We did the broadcast on our camera. We had several SD cards. So the cameras weren't as fancy as the ones that the other companies had, but they worked. We got a good amount of footage. We got about an hour of footage of the president talking along with the events beforehand, and the other speakers, such as running Senator Dave McCormick speaking. So it was really great, yeah.
Carson, this is Paul Rasmussen. I'm the news anchor with Larry here. Curious to know what your takeaway was, what the general theme that you walked away from the rally with. What was the message, the overarching message that stuck out to you?
Do you mean like the, I guess, policy that it was trying to propose?
Yeah.
Okay. I think kind of the main thing that I think Trump was really hampering at was probably the focus on, like, I think he really seems to be focusing on how, like, how he thinks America is, like, really declining and how we're a failing civilization under the Biden and, you know, the upcoming Harris presidency. That seems to be, I think, the thing. I think it's a bit of doom and gloom added in with sort of a bit of, I guess, celebrity worship for him, too. That's what it felt like to me.
And the students that were protesting, were how close were they able to come, or were they kept at bay?
Well, the thing is, they initially had like an area that they were restricted to, which was kind of down the street and away from the Trump protesters lining up to get into the KCAC. But they did storm and start protesting towards the protesters. I saw the cops or secret security or some security force bring them back to their spot and tell them, and I think I even have the footage recorded on this, there's a security telling them, you know, if they do that again, that they will bring in law enforcement.
You mean move from where the designated area is? But other than that, were there any incidents of any sort?
No, there were no incidents of any sort involving the protest. The Trump supporters. So everyone was safe.
So what's your general takeaway? You know, it's not often that a collegiate journalist gets a chance to be so close to such a big, big national event.
Yeah, it's it is really incredible. It was an honor to be there. It was incredible to see the former president 35 feet away. He looks similar to how he does on television. It was a really incredible event, and it feels like a great opportunity for me. It feels like a great opportunity for the man that I was with, Ram Sharma. He was there helping just as much as I was. He was great. And it does feel like I was part of a very historic moment in this country, especially since this is his first rally right after his second assassination attempt.
Well, I was thinking, Carson, maybe you could write about your experience, like a small column, perhaps, or even a book about like what it's like to do this for one day, total immersion, right?
Yeah. That would certainly be a consideration, I think.
I understand you wear many hats, Carson, there at IUP. you're still a student, obviously. How close are you to graduation?
Well, I'm actually a senior now. I graduate next spring.
All right, we expect to see you at our doorstep.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, appreciate you taking time for us, and good luck in the future. Yeah, stay in touch. Where'd you grow up?
Absolutely. I grew up in Eastern Pennsylvania. So I'm sorry, I'm an Eagles fan, but
what? I'm sorry. We've broken up. No, Carson, we appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You got it. From IUP News, Senior Carson Zadrago on the Big K Morning Show. Man, that would have been an opportunity, Paul, to be in school and have that kind of story just land on your doorstep.
Well, I was in my first TV job, news job as a Cub reporter. I was all of 19 years old, working for my hometown TV station, the ABC affiliate. Ted Kennedy was running for president in 1980, came to Helena, Montana. I was given the assignment, got to go and do exactly what we heard this young man say right here. It was one of the most memorable days in my career. Had a great time.
Yeah, when I was at Clarion as a young quasi-journalist, I remember meeting the pirate parrot. Nobody came up there. Jack Bogut did once, and that was probably the biggest name ever. Odyssey Optic is with you wherever you go. AUDACY. You can stream or Bluetooth through that app, and it's access to a lot of great audio information and video now, too. KDKRadio.com, also a great resource. So, Paul, coming up, I ask Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, who we've talked to for two decades here periodically, and he's going to join us after the news at 8:30. And the reason is I think, like me, there are a lot of people who hear about what's going on in the Middle East, and it's hard to sort through who's who and who's doing what to who sometimes.
Absolutely correct. And Jeff is a great guy to ask these questions of because, first of all, he's one of the most knowledgeable people I've listened to over the last 15 years on topics like this involving both political and cultural and military angles. But also I would say that Jeff has a really good understanding of what's been going on in that region specifically for a long time. The rocket fire that's been coming out of southern Lebanon, fired by Hezbollah into the Israeli settlements and in, you know, wherever they were inhabiting in northern Israel, has cleared out tens of thousands of people. The Israelis are responding to that, and Hezbollah is getting a lot of their support from Iran. So this is a multifaceted problem, and it's a completely separate situation compared to what's been going on in Gaza. But the Israeli military is, boy, are they drawing a lot of attention.
And the gathering in New York, President Biden landed in New York. They have at the United Nations this summit this week. And to kind of wrap it around, CBS's Jared Hill.
President Biden came into office promising to rejuvenate the United States' relations with the world and world leaders, but his legacy might be shaped by his administration's handling of those conflicts expected to be addressed here at the UN today.
Heightened security in New York after President Joe Biden landed in the city Monday ahead of his final address before the UN General Assembly as Commander-in-Chief. The speech comes as Israel dropped a barrage of missiles on southern Lebanon Monday. Nearly 500 killed, including dozens of women and children, according to Lebanese officials. But Israel says each target was a location used for storing Hezbollah weapons. The U.S. designated terror group has escalated attacks on Israel in solidarity with Hamas since the October 7th attacks.
I have a message for the people of Lebanon. Israel's war is not with you. It's with Hezbollah.
The Pentagon Monday announced plans to send a small number of additional U.S. troops to the Middle East, bolstering the nearly 40,000 already stationed in the region. The State Department also urging Americans in Lebanon to leave while commercial flights are still available.
My team is in constant contact with their counterparts, and we're working to de-escalate.
In his address, President Biden is expected to highlight the U.S.'s role in defending Ukraine, managing competition with China, and ongoing efforts to strike a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. But experts say the real work will happen out of the spotlight.
The meetings on the margins of the General Assembly between world leaders that we don't actually get to listen to or take part in is likely where we'll see the more substantive discussions.
But little hope much here will move the needle.
Israeli officials say that Netanyahu's trip to the UN has been delayed by a number of days because of the conflicts that are happening in Lebanon.
But it does not appear that President Biden will meet with Netanyahu in New York, at least on this trip. So this is an important week. And again, we'll look forward to retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland kind of help us understand what's happening. But you made a good point to me just a moment off air.
Oh, yeah. I was just telling Larry that I've been doing stories about violence in Lebanon since 1977 when I was working part-time in high school. And this would include the Civil War, the barracks bombing that killed all those U.S. service people, and then the ongoing conflict with Israel and Hezbollah.
Well, we'll hopefully have a chance to kind of give you a new frame of reference.
What I'd like to ask Jeff is what can be done to stop it, to get people to just back away for a while and let things simmer down?
And that said, there is a documentary coming out that has just been released, We Will Dance Again, and it's a documentary by I believe, five survivors of the October 7th massacre and terrorist attack that started this latest round. And that was a year ago coming up in just a couple of weeks. And apparently it's pretty raw. They had phone footage and footage of when they were just at a music event in one case, and Hamas terrorists came in and obviously executed people and took prisoners, hostages, and some of those hostages are still there. So this, it's hard to sort through every detail of this and give some understanding, but it's an important topic because we hear about it each and every day.
Well, it's been inescapable since the 7th of October last year, Larry.
Yeah.
So it's almost a solid year of nonstop, you know, military action and reaction.
What might come next, we'll ask Colonel Jeff McCausland coming up right after news with Paul at the bottom of this hour. In 2 weeks, on October 7th, it'll be 1 year since 1,195 people were killed. Armed groups of Hamas terrorists came into Israel, took hostages, 251 civilians and Israeli security force personnel, and took them to Gaza. What's transpired since then has been unimaginable. And joining us to kind of take us through this whole situation in the Middle East is CBS senior military analyst, a retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, good morning.
Larry, good morning to you, sir.
I think a lot of us, me being a citizen who hears about the Middle East, and it's there's a lot of confusion about what's going on. So we know after that October 7th terrorist attack, crimes against humanity, Hamas into Israel, that Israel has retaliated in a big way. Now, how did Lebanon get involved in this whole thing?
From the very onset of this conflict, on like the 8th of October of last year, Larry, Hezbollah, a terrorist organization supported by Iran that operates in southern Lebanon, launched missile, rocket, artillery strikes against northern Israel in support of Hamas after their attack on October the 7th. And they have continued to do that, this tit-for-tat with the Israelis, for the past year. Hamas, or Hezbollah, I should say, has linked any type of ceasefire in the north to the Israelis achieving a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. So these two things are linked, and it seems very little chance at the moment that we will see a ceasefire between Hamas and the Israelis and the possibility of the release of the hostages. But this particular war in the north has continued again for the whole year, and about 60,000 Israeli citizens have fled northern Israel because of this bombardment. I should add, by the way, probably 80,000 or more Lebanese on the northern side of that border have fled as well. In the last few weeks, this has intensified, and the Israeli cabinet voted about 2 weeks ago or less to elevate the mission in the north, the return of these 60,000 people to their home, the ending of this particular exchange of artillery and missile fire with the Hezbollah was now of equal importance to their other two objectives in this conflict, and that is the destruction of Hamas and the freeing of the hostages. And now in the last week, we see the Israeli military refocusing assets and their attention to the north. We had this shocking event about a week ago where we had literally thousands of pagers explode in Beirut, Lebanon, killing a number of Hezbollah operatives and leaders, injuring 2,000 or more. Subsequently, the next day was an explosion of walkie-talkies. And since those two events, we've seen an intensified Israeli air campaign against targets all across Lebanon. In the last 24 hours, there are estimates over 500 people in Lebanon have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. 1,500 to 1,600 have been injured in the most intense fighting between Hezbollah and the Israelis that we have seen since the major war they fought back in 2006.
Jeff, Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know what you think is going to take place next.
Boy, Paul, if I knew that, I'd be a popular guy. Well, one of two things. I mean, wars have a way of working themselves out, and they do come to an end. Either A, and I think the Israeli hope is this intensified bombardment, the chaos they've inflicted on Hamas with the destruction of their command and control, will get Hezbollah to back off, and the strikes against northern Israel and these people can go back home again. And then Israel will have to deal with its other problems, which are the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Now, that's an optimistic assessment. I think there's little likelihood that Hezbollah will back off, simply because to do so would, you know, really be a gesture of how weak they are in the face of this Israeli attack and damage their image all across the region as perhaps the most powerful Iranian surrogate in the region. The other possibility, of course, is an intensification on both sides of attacks, ending up with an Israeli ground incursion into Lebanon, trying to push Hezbollah back to a distance that would allow these people to return to their homes. We'd have something like the war back in 2006. Now, for the Israelis, that will put them, I think, in a pretty difficult resource position, simply because they still have large numbers of Israeli forces devoted to the final military operations in Gaza. We have intensified problems for the Israelis on the West Bank. We have the Israelis being striked by the Houthi rebels from Yemen. We have missile strikes coming in to Israel launched by militia groups in Iraq. And now a war in Lebanon. That's a whole lot of war that you got to handle. Last but not least, I'd say the real question is what happens in Iran, because Iran is the supporter of Hezbollah, the supporter of Hamas. If the Iranians continue that support and make a decision to intensify the conflict through these proxies, or the real worry, of course, is that those totally out of control, and we end up in a major regional war involving all these particular states: Hamas, Hezbollah, perhaps these Iraqi militia groups, the Houthis, as well as Iran.
And all of that focused on New York at the United Nations this week, with so many nations gathering. Hopefully something positive will come out of it, but it's hard to say, right, Colonel?
I'd say that's exactly right, Larry. I mean, there'll be a lot of talk about the wars in the Middle East, a lot of talk about a concern of a major regional conflict, a lot of talk about humanitarian assistance. Let's not forget, in the war that's going on for the last year, somewhere around 42,000 Palestinians have been killed. About 95,000 Palestinians have been injured. 1.9 million Palestinians out of a population of only 2.2 million have been displaced from their homes. And the destruction in the Gaza Strip is horrific, a humanitarian disaster we can only imagine, frankly, in our worst nightmares.
Colonel, always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. And hopefully that brings a little bit of focus, but it's just hard for us in general to wrap our arms around what's going on.
Well, I think not only the current situation being as complex as it is with so many different angles, but also, Larry, over a period of decades, we've grown used to hearing about trouble in Lebanon and trouble in Israel and trouble in Iraq. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
For a lot of people, it would be a tune out to hear, oh, yeah, yep, I don't understand that. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
We always hear about this periodically. But what changed was October 7th last year, which was this trigger. And we don't know where it's going to go next. Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour, Dr. Jerry Schuster, professor of presidential rhetoric at the University of Pittsburgh, but he lives in Katanning, and yesterday called me. He goes, you'll never guess who's a couple blocks down the street. Donald Trump. And he went to, what was the name of that grocery store? Do you remember? Sparklers or Spacklers?
Like Carl Spackler, right? From Caddyshack. No, it's Spanklers.
Spanklers.
Grocery store.
Of course.
Where he helped someone with their grocery bill and then bought a great big bag of popcorn.
This is the line. I love this, you know, off the heavy duty stuff, just the personal stuff.
Right.
What did he say?
Oh, I'm going to have to open it up now. Jeez, I don't want to misquote it.
It's well worth it.
This is the campaign stuff that I have fun with. I really enjoy it when the candidates interact with the public and then the reporters, you know, get a good idea what the heck's going on with them. It's just, you know, on a one-on-one basis. But, oh, no, they buried it. Oh, wouldn't you know it? Well, basically, I'll say this much. He said, is this the best popcorn?
Right.
You know, and he gets a confirmation from someone in the crowd. You know, well, we just got a big bag of it. And he said, well, we'll take it back. And he's handing it over to the people on his staff. And he says, so if I win re-election and we like this popcorn, I'll be sending out for it from the White House.
And you probably probably could do that.
You know, stop by one of the cash registers and hand it over a $100 bill so somebody, a mother of three, could have a lower grocery bill.
And then Trump was in Smithton, PA, talking to some farmers and talked about the John Deere tractors that were behind him, saying if they move their assembly plant out of the country, then he's going to put a 200% tariff on their vehicles, right?
Yeah, the tractors that were behind him were manufactured here in the U.S. John Deere, for the longest time, and to my memory, has a gigantic manufacturing plant in Iowa. Or is it Illinois? One of the two. But in June, John Deere announced they wanted to build a new facility in Mexico and that they've been looking for land and so forth. So he has been, this is one of Donald Trump's go-to maneuvers when something's going to go economically against the United States in some way. Tariffs are his immediate response. And it's the reason why, by the way, we don't see the Chinese electronic vehicles, the electric vehicles, rather, that the Chinese are churning out in great numbers. You can get them almost all over the world, but not in the United States because of the tariffs.
So we'll talk Dr. Schuster about his unique experience yesterday in Katanning.
And that, by the way, is no endorsement from me for the electric vehicle operations in China. I'm just stating what I know.
Right. Just give the facts. That's what we're supposed to do, even though on talk shows, they can give a lot more. We're trying to just say what was said and from one side or the other.
Let's just shoot right down the middle.
Because we believe you are going to make your own decision. You don't need Paul and I to tell you what to do. Right? If it's come to that, you're in trouble.
So vote Trump and your incomes will soar, your net worth will skyrocket, your energy cost and grocery prices will come tumbling down, and we will bring back the American dream, bigger, better, and stronger than ever before, the American dream.
Former President Donald Trump last night in Indiana, Pennsylvania at IUP. Before that, he spoke to farmers in Smithton, PA, and before that, he was in Armstrong County, in Katanning. And joining us is Dr. Jerry Schuster, who is a professor and expert in presidential rhetoric. Doc, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you recall, and Paul and I were talking about this earlier, any president, former or in office, visiting Katanning?
Yes. Bill Clinton, President Clinton visited here, as did John Kennedy way back in 1960.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, yesterday the visit from the candidate came after the visit to Smithton, PA. And I have to tell you, it's probably one of the most unusual presidential visits in any community. It was not advertised. Only the emergency services of the community were given notice. Our fire department was given advance notice to keep a bay open in any eventuality for emergency services. And then he went to one of the grocery stores in the community. The car backed up to the door, main door of the grocery store. He went into the store, toured it very quickly. And then this is why we concluded it was probably done for an ad purpose, because what he did was there were people that, even though the store had been closed the entire day, there were people allegedly going through the grocery line, and then he came up to them and handed them a $100 bill and said, were I to be elected, this $100 bill would go so much further with regard to the groceries that you're buying today. So that was the status of his visit. He was here probably, I'm going to say half an hour, did not speak publicly to the community and left as quickly as he arrived. And there were probably, I would guess somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people surrounding the store, but they never had an opportunity to interact in any way, shape, or form with him.
Well, for those not knowing that he was going to be there. That's a lot of people. And Paul, you want to make a slight correction to the name of the store. Don't say it.
Oh, yes, Dr. Schuster, I embarrassed everyone here at the station this morning by getting it wrong. We were calling it Spankler's Groceries instead of Sprankler's.
It's Sprankles.
Yeah, it's Sprankles, and yeah.
And they're well-known in the region, right?
Sorry about that.
Yes, they are.
Not Spankles. That's a different place in a different city.
Oh, my.
Meanwhile, it never ceases to amaze me how this region is still in the focus. And we're 6 weeks from the election today, and the candidates keep coming. Kamala Harris coming to Pittsburgh again tomorrow.
Right. Well, I understand her rationale for coming to Western Pennsylvania a bit easier than I understand the former president. This is a very the areas that he visited yesterday are really mega areas. He has nothing to worry about with regard to the election in these areas. It seems like if you were strategically developing, direction to try to generate more votes, or maybe he was here to reinforce votes. I don't know. But, going to Indiana, coming to Katanning, being in Smithton, this is generally mega area.
Yeah, and that's definitely all the counties around Allegheny County. Generally, that is the case. Meanwhile,
correct.
We've got J.D. Vance supposed to come to the area on Friday or Saturday. And then I mentioned Kamala Harris coming tomorrow. But then a week from tonight will be the one and only vice presidential debate on CBS.
We're all looking forward to that. That should be a real gem.
It's going to be interesting to me.
Yeah, very.
Even if you didn't have a party that you were affiliated with, just to see how these two men will interact.
Right. I can assure you, I think that J.D. Vance is underestimating the ability of Walz. I really do, because of the comments that he's made. He seems to think that this is, foregone conclusion, that he's going to be, as his Yale background will and his legal background will, take him further into more effective debating skills than Walz has. I don't think that's going to occur the way he anticipates.
Well, we'll see. We'll be carrying it in its entirety here from CBS on KDKA.
It seems to me, guys, that these trips that you were mentioning this a moment ago, Dr. Schuster, about being in MAGA country, what good does that do? Or, the Harris visit that's coming up tomorrow here in Pittsburgh. It seems to me about generating enthusiasm and getting the turnout more than anything else.
I think that is a motive as reasonable and acceptable as anything else one could come up with. He certainly had a very active crowd at the Kovalchuk Center in Indiana last night. That was the turnout for the Republican Party was excellent. But in terms of the other areas yesterday, very quiet. It had to be motivated by either ads or private reinforcement of major contributors. I don't know. Nobody seems to know the rationale for that.
Yeah, there must be major contributors, of which there are many in this region also. So
right.
Both parties, though, still think Western Pennsylvania is really important. I guess we should feel happy about that overall, that Pennsylvania and our region is playing such a key role. So,
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think it's great for the election because it will stimulate turnout.
We will stay in touch, Doc. Meanwhile, please apologize to the
Sprankles.
Sprankle, not Spanklers or whatever.
Will
oh,
do.
My gosh.
Dr. Jerry Schuster, thank you, sir. And do you know
thank
what?
You.
The Seneca tribes named Katanning, do you know what it means in the native tongue?
The river. It's called Kitani from the Indian.
Yes, and it means, river, right?
Right.
Very good. You've passed the test.
You got that one right.
Pop quiz.
Thank you very much.
Hey, by the way, Larry, we've got to remember to ask Marty in about 30 minutes or so what the impact has been on ad dollars here in the Pittsburgh market for the political ads.
Yes. Please make a note of it. This is the Big K Morning Show, coming off a jazz weekend in the Berg. And every Tuesday at this time, we check in with our colleague, Lynn Hayes Freeland, who joins us via video, too. You can see Lynn on the radio like you did on TV for four decades, kdkradio.com. All right, Lynn, I didn't have to say the four decades thing. I got you. Good morning.
No, you really didn't. You really didn't, but it's okay.
Does
it
surprise you, Lynn, that Southwestern Pennsylvania is such a big deal to the candidates?
You know what? It really doesn't. When I think back 4 years ago to the presidential race, we were significant then, and it's only gotten more so. What I find amazing, and I heard either you or Paul Rasmussen just say that, you know, you needed to find out what the impact had been financially on the area. And I was in town not too long ago, and here in Georgia, I thought we were getting bombarded with these political ads. But coming to Pittsburgh, it's like, whoa, that's all that's on television.
And radio. And
yeah.
Social media.
It's crazy.
One of the things that we know goes on, it's hard to track or for us to wrap our minds around, is there is legitimate influence and interference being attempted in this election. That's not my opinion. That's
that's fact.
That Russia is doing disinformation, creating AI, trying to create as much chaos as they can as part of their disruption of this process. That's why it's so important that people don't buy into everything they see or hear, because as we pointed out last week, and we talked to John Delano extensively about this, the candidates, their campaign, or the money that supports them, they don't all have to tell the truth. And so everything you're seeing is tainted to some degree or another.
Without a doubt, Larry. In fact, the other day I was watching a commercial. It was a political ad, and they were using one of the candidates, and they were using a soundbite from one of the candidates, but they cut it off before that person finished the context. So it fit into that little slot in the commercial, but it was taken completely out of context. And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder how many people realize that that was not the end of the thought. That was not the end of the sentence. And as a result, that's really not what that candidate said.
And I've heard people quote candidates, and it's like, that's not exactly what, oh yeah, I heard it. And so
I heard it.
It creates that kind of confusion. Now, Kamala Harris coming back to Pittsburgh tomorrow. As we detailed, Donald Trump was here yesterday, and Smithton, Katanning, and IUP. And J.D. Vance supposed to come back to the area this weekend. And, you know, I mean, it's just on and on and on. And I don't know what, at this point, somebody's mind will be changed or if you made your affiliations, but they certainly think it's going to have an impact some way.
I mean, clearly they do. And I'm assuming there is some research to indicate that, you know, there are still a lot of undecideds out here. I find it interesting because I am of the mindset, if you haven't made up your mind at this point, because clearly these are two very distinctly different candidates. So I don't understand how you're still sitting on the fence, how some folks are waffling. But if them coming to town makes a difference, that's great. I have a question, though, and I don't know if you guys cover this or not. But Jerry Schuster mentioned it looked like maybe Donald Trump was shooting a political spot. He walked up to the people in the store and handed them $100 bills. Did they get to keep them?
I would. I don't think it would be good if he tried to take it back. I think he could afford to throw a few fun tickets. Some people call those $100 bills. But I did like the popcorn part of the story where he saw a bag of popcorn and said, you know, the human side of, man, popcorn, that sounds good. If it's as good as you say it is, when I'm president, I'll send people to get it in the future.
I'll send people to get it. Exactly. Yeah.
And outside of that, what's on your mind? What do you think?
Let me just circle back to one other thing, because we were talking about these outside influences. And on social media the other day, I saw what was the equivalent of an ad. It was Oprah Winfrey. And it was taking a completely different position than I have seen or heard her take in the past. So I'm sitting there looking at this thing, and it finally hit me. it was artificial intelligence. It wasn't really Oprah. And the more I looked at the way her mouth moved, I could tell it was not Oprah. But I'm thinking now, anybody else could look at this and think, oh, she's had a change of heart. She's had a change of position. And I wonder, now it's got me looking at all these things I see now, and I'm trying to figure out, is this real or is it fake?
Well, let's be honest. You can't really trust anything on social media for any reason. They've done this with professional sports players, coaches. Same thing, Lynn, where you hear this coach saying these outrageous things about his own team, and you realize he's not really saying that.
Right.
So you have to, it's on us to be very careful when it comes to social media. And to that point, Bob Casey, obviously Dave McCormick's running against him, and people to put money up are now suggesting that Bob Casey is, you know, responsible for every ill of humankind, including the Lindbergh baby kidnapping.
Wait, I didn't hear that. Really?
I mean, it's just absurd. So many of us will be happy when the 6 weeks are over. We'll be back,
it's over.
Back with more Lynn Hayes Freeland on the Big K Morning Show. And in between 10 until 2, Marty Griffin, and we'll check in with Marty in just a moment. Right now, back to Lynn Hayes Freeland. So, Lynn, what else are you working on?
Let me just stay with the presidential race here for just a second. Because, you know, one of the big controversies over the last couple of days has been Janet Jackson and her comments that she had heard, and that was her word, heard, and I'm using, you know, air quotes here, that Kamala's father was white, and people pounced all over her. And it really got me thinking, because I think about people like Janet Jackson, I'll be honest, Taylor Swift, Amber Rose. I don't know how many people are actually influenced by a celebrity, an entertainer, actually endorsing a candidate. Is it just me?
I don't think so. I think there is some influence if the entertainer is powerful enough where their base, their following, like a Taylor Swift, wants to energize mostly younger audience to make sure they're registered to vote and to vote. So that's where I think it could be an influence, make it seem important and worthwhile to do for some of their audience. Now, how much that will really have an effect, it will be impossible to measure completely.
Well, and I do think that if I remember correctly, right after Taylor Swift made some comments, there was like a big surge in voter registration. I want to say a couple hundred thousand young people registered. So that makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me. But I just look at a lot of these celebrity endorsements and just kind of leaves me scratching my head, because for me, but again, I follow politics. You know, I watch it, I read it. I consume politics every day, so maybe I'm different in that regard, but I just can't imagine having a, I'll use Al Pacino as an example, because I think he had something to say at one point. I just can't imagine, oh yeah, I'm going to vote for this person because Al Pacino said it's a good thing to do.
Well, there's a lot of celebrity worship that goes on in this country, as you know, for athletes and singing stars and actors and actresses. That said, what about this Sean Puffy Combs story, where there are so many celebrities, both candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, have had interactions with P. Diddy over the years, and the crimes that he's being accused of are very, very serious. Will trying to attach them in any way change anybody's vote?
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, Larry, from all of the, and again, I hate to keep referring to social media, but from all of the social media stuff that I've seen, you and I are probably the only two people who haven't had some interaction or our paths haven't crossed with Puff. So, you know, I don't think that's going to have a big impact. I mean, if nothing else, what it does is, I mean, I guess there was a meme or a tweet or something that allegedly Donald Trump had posted showing Kamala Harris with him. Then I heard that was fake. It was taken down. So, you know, I mean, there's so much of that going on. I just don't know how that could affect your decision on who to vote for.
I did see that post, and it was taken down. It's interesting because if you're living off that world, we call it when all you do is doom scroll on social media, the amount of negativity you absorb in a day and the amount of what is real and what is unreal is hard to separate. And I think it does influence people. Clearly, it's very powerful, but it's on us, each individual, to really be careful of what you digest as truth on social media in particular.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It's kind of, if you think back, I remember when Facebook first came about. And I remember, I want to say it was my daughter. She's the older of my two. She was in college, and she introduced me to this thing called Facebook. And she said, hey, it's a way to get to know the kids on campus, keep in touch with the kids that I went to high school with. It was a very uplifting, positive thing. And then gradually, you know, then came Twitter, then came Instagram, then came X, then came all these other things. And all of a sudden, it wasn't this positive way to keep in touch with people anymore. It became a way to drag people. It became a way to spread false information. And I don't know, Larry, you know, as much as I like things changing and the future, I'm not sure that social media has been the big benefit to us as a society as we want to say it has.
It certainly has had its, it's like the old Wild West where anything goes, good to bad and the ugly. That said, how about them Steelers? 3-0. Listen, Pat McAfee, who's from Plum High School, kicked at West Virginia and for the Colts, is, as you're probably aware, a big star in his world now, ESPN, College Game Day. He had Bill Belichick, the legendary coach of the Patriots, on. And
oh, yeah, sure.
Let me just share a little snippet from yesterday.
That's a real deal in Pittsburgh. They had no idea if either quarterback was going to work. They see Justin Fields work and they're like, that's all we needed. That's literally all we needed. Hopes are very high over there, coach.
Well, everybody's worried about the Pittsburgh quarterback situation. They might have the best one in the league.
How about that?
So let me ask you this, because this is the question people keep asking me. What happens to Russell Wilson now? Does he leave?
You know, they're paying Denver's paying his huge salary.
He's almost
at no cost to the Steelers economically, which we knew going in, right? And we knew Russell Wilson wasn't the future. But a very strong, I mean, he's a Super Bowl champ, a great athlete, but he's had this issue with his calf. So then you have a quarterback who was a number one pick who struggled for three seasons in Chicago who comes in, and he does what they asked him to do, and he shows great athletic ability. He can rifle that football, and he's 3-0. So how do you take him out at this point going to Indiana?
Oh, I don't think you can. Yeah, I don't think you can. I think it's interesting because, you know, Steeler fans, Pittsburghers, we are slow to embrace. You know, we're a little skeptical. We want to see what you can do before we're going to be all in for any particular athlete. It's been amazing in the last couple of days, how many people have gotten behind Justin. It's been amazing to me, the support and the love that he's now getting from Steeler fans.
We'll see Sunday at 1 o'clock in Indy. Lynn Hayes-Preland, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
All right, have a good one.
6 weeks to the election and the countdown is on. Coming up, we'll check in with Marty Griffin next on the Big K Morning Show. Coming up, 10 until 2, Marty Griffin. Get Marty.
What was the name of that store? Raz said trouble. Spank Me's? What? Raz. Spank Me's.
No.
What?
Paul.
That's where we went for Larry's bachelor party, Spank Me's.
It was Sprankles. Is that it?
Sprankles grocery store in Kittanning.
Hey, Larry, look to your left. Our girl Samantha, she's working the babushka.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I like it.
It's nice, right?
Are you allowed to comment on co-workers' attire?
Her hat.
Okay.
How about Trump? He's going to tariff, John Deere, 200%. Anything you build in Mexico. From the Wall Street Journal this morning.
The Wall Street Journal.
Mexico is tariff-free access to America because Trump put together the U.S.-Mexico trade agreement during his administration. He can't tariff Mexico. Just point of fact. Hey, a lot of folks are concerned that you cannot get mental health treatment, Western Psych. Big demonstrations yesterday. They're going to take it on alive, the folks from Western Psych. Look, Larry, I've said this to you, man, and Patrick knows this. I don't care where you're calling. Try right now to get a bed in a psych ward for someone you love. Try to get an appointment with a psychiatrist for your teenager for anxiety or depression or suicidal thoughts. So we can blame UPMC all we want, but this is an American tragedy right now, and we got to address this.
Try to get it on a much, you know, less critical note. Try to get an appointment with a dermatologist.
Oh, Larry, that can be 6 months. Hold on. Try to get your teeth cleaned. A year. I'm not exaggerating. My man, we're in a crisis in America regarding trying to get things done like that. Healthcare, teeth cleaning, crazy stuff, Larry. And there's really no end in sight. Hey, woman we're going to talk to this morning. This is how folks live in fear on the South Side. She's 76 years old. She sends me this note. At daybreak, sunrise this morning, I went out on my back porch to find a man lying totally naked on my sidewalk. Okay, I called 911. I called four times. It took police over an hour to get there. At least 8 phone calls. Larry, we can't do this.
Coming up with Marty.